Our next speaker is Ty Burkett. He is the Managing Director of Willis Re Australia, based in Sydney. He works with the insurance and government clients, advising, modelling, structuring and placing reinsurance. Well, he works with Willis Re. What are you expecting to do? Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Ty.
Good afternoon, and thank you for the opportunity to speak. Andy, besides scaring everyone, talked a bit about moving past prevention into adaptation and how important that is. He also made you realise if you're in the agriculture, insurance or igloo construction industries, you have to make some changes. Frankie gave it a bit more of a human aspect, which I think is very important at these sort of conferences when we spend a lot of time on modelling and probably should spend some time on the actual people themselves. In terms of today, I'm just going to speak for 10 minutes about the insurance impact and the global response or otherwise. I'm going to talk about managing long-term trends, the role of insurance. I've got one lazy, very simple slide on lessons learnt, and so I'm just going to refer back to Frankie with the various North, South, Burdett and Ipswich lessons. And then probably for the fifth time today, you'll hear about affordability. So in terms of managing long-term trends, what do we see insurers and reinsurers do? I've sort of broken it down into four main approaches. There's ignore, there's message, there's adapt, and there's influence. And just to talk about each of those briefly. In terms of ignore, a group called Cirrus in consulting in the US have just put out a report last month. They focused on insurance companies that wrote more than $100 million of premium that was either in the state of California, Connecticut, Washington, Minnesota, or New York. Apart from the initial shock that you could have 330 companies that fall into that group, which would make a new business pipeline quite good, it was more the fact that 276 of them had minimal or beginning response to climate change, and that has been a bit of a shock for the industry. 90% had no public climate risk statement, and I think if you see the nine that came out as leading, not many of them are US companies. So there has been a bit of an outcry in the US around this. There are various reasons given, generally privately, for not responding to climate change. We work in an industry on the general insurance side where products are generally 12 months. That gives you time to reprice. That gives you time to react to competitors. Also, Andy talked about decadal trends, but we've seen the short-term volatility that we get. So it is very hard, just on using usual insurance statistic methodology, to actually separate the long-term decadal trend from the short-term noise. And so a lot of people are slow to recognise it. Another approach is messaging. And a lot of insurance companies and reinsurance companies are looking to get the message out there about climate change. It would not be a talk about global insurance if I didn't plagiarise some Swiss Re slides. So we have a couple here. A couple of things you'll notice here. And this is not just about climate change. This is also about development and the location of that development. You have two trend lines. The lower one is the insured losses. The higher one is the total loss. Two things to notice. One, anyone can see they're going upwards. And two, the gap is widening. So not only are we seeing increased losses, we're seeing an increase in the amount of uninsured losses. And that increase and that gap is much, much bigger in developing countries than it is in developed countries. The other thing that Swiss Re have done as well is they've looked at what the 1 in 200 year event might look like at the moment, or 2013 for last year, and in 2023. Again, this is with various trends in terms of climate, but also in terms of exposure. And you'll notice we generally talk in the reinsurance industry about the biggest event being $80 billion with Hurricane Katrina. They're saying currently that 1 in 200 event might be $200 billion, or in 10 years' time, $320 billion. You've got big jump ups, and I won't do my pointing from here, but you've got big jump ups in particular in cities in China and all through Asia. You've got things like the Thai floods. The other thing here is also the earthquake numbers go up. So even if you have events like earthquake without a climate change impact, you are still with urban development in all the wrong areas, still seeing an upward trend. Now to put that in context, $320 billion, the reinsurance markets, probably just north of $500 billion of reinsurance capital. Take that up to $600 billion close to it with new capital. So just to put that in context, these are big numbers. Adapt, another approach. And you are seeing people gradually adapt. An interesting one, I spoke earlier about 12-month policies. One country that does offer multiple year policies is Japan. On the life insurance side, life insurers have offered 30-year policies because generally they'll say, let's model it, the mortality trend is flat and we'll make some profit when it actually turns out to be better. The trend here is going the other way. But Japan, in Australia, the bank checks you've got an insurance policy for the first day of your mortgage and then doesn't really care after that. In Japan, you take out an insurance policy for 30 or 35 years on a flat premium for the life of your mortgage. Insurers can set their rates within certain constraints, but there is a general insurance rating organisation that sets a tariff rate for Guide. It came out in July and did two things. The first thing, it put the rate up by 3.5%. Now we're talking about a country that is pumping money into the economy, desperate for this thing called inflation. But they've managed to put the rate up 3.5% on the claims data. But they've also come out and said this rate will only apply for 10 years. And the policy should only be 10 years. So we're now seeing an industry that was offering long-term policies, which makes sense if you've got a mortgage, now saying rather than up to 35 years, we'll end up with 10-year policies and move towards the rest of the world. In the United Kingdom, the Bank of England has written to insurers and said, can you please let us know the viability of your business model? And insurers have to come back to the Bank of England to say that they can stay in business. Australia, we've had various things with the Product Commission, and Carl will talk a little bit about the local industry. And globally, we're seeing much, much smarter data, risk selection, rating. That has a couple of consequences. That then means insurers are choosing where they play and where they don't play. You're also seeing in these developed countries various government reinsurance arrangements. So then you step across and look at the side where you can influence. And we are seeing some organisations in the insurance sector actually trying to influence the discussion. The Rockefeller Centre has the 100 Resilient City Initiative, which Swiss Re are a big part of. 32 cities have come online. They range from Melbourne to Mexico City, from Boulder, Colorado to Bangkok. So a wide range of cities looking at different ways around resilience. The Munich Re Climate Insurance Initiative. Funnily enough, the main thing I picked up on this was it was quite proud of the fact it was in the top 100 climate think tanks. I was quite amazed there was 100 climate think tanks, but it's in the top 100. In Australia, you've seen the Business Roundtable with IAG, Munich Re, Westpac, Optus, the Red Cross, looking at disaster recovery and resilience. You've seen flood mitigation. And again, the insurers have driven it, and Frankie talked well about that. But you see someone like Suncorp with a big market share up there actually using their market share to have an influence. By threatening to leave the market, they could have change come through. Seeing regulators like the Bank of England, as I mentioned, and various industry bodies like the ICA. I want to just talk about insurance briefly in terms of the role of insurance. What does insurance do? Insurance is not the answer to everything. Insurance reshapes your risk profile. It reshapes a corporate's risk profile. It reshapes an insurance company's risk profile. When my wife crashes the car, I know it won't cost me more than $1,000. So it's reshaped my risk profile. It enables risk transfer and pools risk. It leads to risk quantification, and to a certain degree it influences behaviour. I give a running commentary to make sure my wife doesn't crash the car any more times, and there's only so many $1,000 you can pay. But what insurance doesn't do is it doesn't remove the risk, and it doesn't change the risk. It can influence behaviour. What insurance does is moves the risk around to somewhere that can handle it more efficiently. But it's a matter of whether the individual, the corporation, the insurance company, the reinsurance company, or the government, or the taxpayers is taking that risk. Having insurance does not actually remove the problem. You cannot turn around and see some of Andy's slides and go, don't worry, insurance will take care of that. Lessons not necessarily learnt. And again, much better slides from Frankie. I had Grantham Rebuild. I had levies in Roma and St George. The thing that worries people like Frankie, the things that worries is concerning for the insurance industry is when someone like Kevin Rudd can get up after Marysville in Victoria and say, we will rebuild this town brick for brick. Now, it could be worse. He could have said, we will rebuild this town flammable panel by flammable panel. But even just to do it in the same location, you then have something like Brisbane. The water level at 2011 was not as high as 1974. The population had doubled, but the inundation was probably four times as many houses. And Frankie can tell me if my numbers are completely wrong. But you have seen South Bank, a lot of the footage after the Brisbane River, Brisbane floods was around South Bank. South Bank didn't exist in 1974. You hear the stories about real estate agents moving the markers from the flood levels from 1974 to sell houses without knowing it. So again, it's back to learning those lessons. So the last thing I want to talk to, and a few people have talked about it today, is affordability. We all know from our fairy tales that pigs only use 3 building materials. They either use straw, wood, or brick. So let's say we've got a portfolio of pigs' houses, 10% of straw, 40% of wood, 50% of brick. And we charge everyone the same premium. That premium might be $640. The pig with the straw house is not necessarily going to realise he's getting a great deal. And those in the brick houses might mumble and complain, particularly post-claim when their house is all right and the other pigs have been blown down. But generally, along we go. But we then decide we're going to adjust the premiums by the building type. And it might look like something like this. Still adds up to the same total premium, but you end up with $1,200 for the straw house down to $400 for the brick house. Now let's take it a step further. We know that big bad wolf is the cause of these houses blowing down. So let's introduce a new rating factor. Oops, sorry, skipped a skip. Another thing we do, those straw houses, they're all sitting on the coast or they're all sitting on the river. And we suddenly realise that those straw houses are driving our reinsurance costs. So let's allocate the reinsurance a little bit better. So now, instead of $1,200, we're $1,400 and less allocation to the brick houses. So now they're starting to get some real price differential. We then decide we're going to introduce a rating factor called distance to wolf. And suddenly, a third of the houses are quite close to the wolf and they're paying $1,900. The middle ones, the same $1,400, the further away, $900. So you've got one pig with his various changes. We're still collecting the same total premium. This poor pig, his premium has tripled. And he's fairly grumpy about it. Now, I haven't even talked about climate change here. So I've taken another step. We now look at that. I'm an insurer. I don't quite know how to model straw vulnerability to wolf breath. So what I do is I go, I'll just stay out of straw houses. And so you get a reduction in competition, a reduction in supply of insurance for straw houses, and the prices go up further. I bring in other rating factors. We talked about big data. These pigs shop at Coles and Woolworths. And they buy, turns out one of the pigs with the $1,900 house buys a case of beer and a packet of cigarettes every time he goes into Woolworths. So suddenly Woolworths look at it and go, we're actually going to put your premium up because we actually think you're riskier. Don't smoke in a straw house. And so you can see, before we've even got to climate change, affordability is an issue. We then bring in climate change. And there was a much better graph than that one I've got there in the previous section, showing that if things go up by 5%, it's going up significantly further in the tail. It does not go up uniformly. So if it's 5% worse, those straw houses on the river close to the wolf are going to get the biggest impact. Insurance cannot change the affordability issue. You can improve it around the edges, you can buy more efficient reinsurance, more efficient sources of capital, but you're only going to make significant changes either if you start to mitigate this risk or you run a system, maybe like the health system, with some element of built-in cross-subsidies. So just to bring it all together, in the insurance and reinsurance industry, there is no argument that the awareness is high. The action is varied. And again, there's public action and private action. So the public message versus what's happening in-house. Insurance is not the answer. Insurance helps make the risk more efficient and use the capital more efficient, but it's not going to actually significantly change the underlying risk. You can influence, and the Suncorp example is a good one there. There needs to be ownership of the risk. And I very strong view that there is a big difference between no insurance and self-insurance. Self-insurance is where you assess the risk and you make an educated decision to retain that risk. No insurance is where you don't understand it and don't bother. So the real focus on the quantification, understand the risk. And we've seen that in Australia with governmental risk. But I know we're not going to buy any shares and they're all on holds or sells, but there are opportunities for insurers. There's a big gap between the economic losses and the insured losses. And you're seeing various products being designed to pick up some of that risk, either in developing countries or for infrastructure, taking the government risk. And there's got to be an opportunity for product development. So I'll just wrap up there.